Money FM 89.3, best of your money. Money and Me on Your Money, only on Money FM 89.3.
So why did the Terra blockchain implode? While analyzing that question and the roots of which sent the crypto market into freefall earlier this month, Ethereum founder Vitalik Buterin in a news article out today said there is no genuine investment that can get anywhere close to 20% returns per year. One of the algorithmic stablecoin's main attractions for investors had been the promised interest rate set as high as 20% for UST deposits in the Terra blockchain-based lending project Anchor. Today, we're going to talk about algorithmic stablecoins. We're going to look at what happened to Terra USD and its sister coin, Luna, said to be the major catalyst for the bear market in cryptocurrency, dropping to nearly $0 over the course of a couple of days, wiping out some $60 billion in Terra coins alone. But I also want to understand two main things in our discussion today. We're going to go back to basics and ask, what is a stablecoin? What gives a stablecoin value? If enough people lose confidence in a stablecoin, is that enough for its value to go up in smoke? And we're also going to ask, how can we as retail consumers assess stablecoins to decide which involve risks that we want to take on? So, to recap, our focus today is, what are stablecoins and how can you decide if you should put your trust and your money into one? Joining me today is Jeff Ira, CEO of Trade Together. How are you, Jeff? Good morning.
Good morning, Michelle. Pretty good. Thank you.
Adrian, how are you? I'm doing really well. Very happy to speak with you, Jeff. Also joining us is Adrian Cheung, founder and chairman of the Fintonia Group. Good morning, Adrian.
Good morning, Michelle. Good morning, Jeff.
All right. Terra is the name for a whole class of stable coins denominated in different fiat currencies, and UST or Terra USD is a particular one denominated in US dollars. We're going to get to what stable coins are and an overview of that. But first, I want to ask for your take on Terra's DeFi model. So Vitalik Buterin has called for a greater level of scrutiny on DeFi financial mechanisms. He says, especially those that try very hard to optimize for capital efficiency. Do you agree? Adrian, do you want to kick us off?
Thank you, Michelle. Yes. Look, I mean, if we talk about DeFi, it really is using technology to match borrowers and lenders. Mm. So if we look into the traditional finance world, where can you achieve 20% interest rates? You could only do that if the person using the deposits that you give them to earn money in other ways. So a bank would take our deposits as consumers, and then they would lend it out to businesses and other consumers.
Right.
But when we deposit with a bank, we earn very little. And when they lend it out, perhaps they're lending it out at 5%, 6%. And when we go into DeFi, the difference is there's no bank. There are smart contracts and rules. Then the question you have to ask yourself is, how can they pay depositors 20%? What are they doing with the cash that's creating real economic value, or people are using the coins in a way that there's demand for those coins? So I think that's always a question in DeFi when you look at high interest rates, is what is driving the demand and usage of those coins? Is it actually something that consumers want to use the coins and therefore are willing to borrow and use it for?
Mm.
Or whether it's developers, then it might make sense.
Great.
If not, then it's probably just an empty promise.
Yeah. To what extent do you agree with this call for greater scrutiny of DeFi mechanisms, Jeff?
Yeah, so I think, Michelle, there are a couple of points in Vitalik's sentence. So first of all, the fact to have more scrutiny on stablecoin in general, and not only algorithmic stablecoin, and the fact to look at more supervision around DeFi. So I agree with Adrian.
Mm-hmm.
The DeFi platform and DeFi space is the only way to get 20% and more return. And the question is also around how the crypto players have access to liquidity in the traditional space. And we know that today we have 25,000 banks in the world, but only 4 crypto-friendly banks. So this is where it's become interesting to understand also why we managed to get such type of interest rate. But again, once you join such a DeFi platform, what type of stablecoin do you use? to get such a return. And we saw the drama with Terra. I guess we're going to certainly discuss about that. Mm-hmm. And this is where we need to have this sort of balance and risk assessment in first place.
Okay. So for the listener who is new to stablecoins, we know that they are a branch of crypto. And given the volatility, people like the idea of buying into something seemingly dependable. So gentlemen, what gives stablecoins their value? How do they back their promises of stability? Adrian?
Yeah. So thanks, Michelle. Essentially, what was the use of stablecoins? So today, if we were to transfer money in the crypto ecosystem and we want to buy Bitcoin and sell Ethereum or vice versa, it can be done almost instantaneously because it's on the internet, right? But if we wanted to actually send fiat currency through the banks, as Jeff mentioned, for example, and we wanted to send US dollars into an exchange, and there's only four banks that are friendly, that could take 2 to 3 days. So if you started to want to trade in the cryptocurrencies and transfer value, it became very difficult. So therefore, doing Bitcoin, Ethereum, it's too volatile. A stablecoin was created because it provides a much faster and more efficient way to settle and transfer value. So that's the background to stablecoins.
So they basically aim to be convertible at par at dollars, but they're backed by assets, right, that may lose their value or become illiquid during stress. And so don't they face redemption risk as well?
I could not agree more with what say Adrian, and you're absolutely right, Michelle. When you're looking at a stable coin behind, you need to understand what is a collateral. And there are various types of stable coin into the market. You're going to have some stable coins that are backed by a specific treasury bill or corporate bonds. You're going to have stable coins that are backed by token, volatile token, and even real estate token or Bitcoin. So the question now is, how does the stable coin issuer attest that they have the reserve to back and for us to trust that the stablecoin is still at the value that we can see? So that's really the more important point here.
So would you say that, you know, stablecoins is a whole giant class, and how would you characterize this class? I mean, do some have a targeting mechanism that tracks the price index, and do some like Tether and USDC rely on sort of asset custodians that the company issues?
Yeah, so if you look at USDT and USDC, they definitely have some specific reserve, and they provide some attestation of their reserve either on a monthly basis or a quarterly basis. And what is interesting here in terms of innovation is that you have other stablecoins who have the possibility to put live their assets. And I think in particular to some token like TrustUSD, and they have a real-time attestation of how many reserves they have, I guess it can bring some comfort. But again, the question is, how can we trust them? And this is where the regulator has to potentially come into the discussion.
Adrian, help us understand, how exactly do stable coins remain stable when we know that cryptocurrency prices can be so highly volatile?
Yes, well, I think Jeff mentioned it's trust. So, I mean, there are three types of stable coins. There's the ones that are, you know, collateralized by fiat as USDC or USDT. So they are supposed to be one-for-one backed by either dollars or treasuries or liquid assets. Mm-hmm. There's a second type, which is crypto-backed stablecoins. Maybe they're backed by Bitcoin. Mm-hmm. Then the third type, which is what Terra UST was, which was what was called an algorithmic stablecoin. I think when it comes down to trust, the two largest fiat-backed cryptocurrencies, stablecoins, Tether and USDC, are beginning to show attestation about their backing, right? And then the question is for all of us is, do we trust that these companies say what they have behind it? Just like a bank, if there is a run on a bank, do we trust that the bank or the central bank who will back up the bank will be there to make sure we can redeem our cash out of the bank?
Right. Right. But this requires information. And so the heart of my show today that I wanted to do, because a lot of retail investors are coming forward saying, is there enough information out there for me to be able to do my due diligence when it comes to stablecoins? So what are your views? What kind of disclosures are made to consumers? Is there enough information out there for the retail investor to decide which stablecoin to trust in?
So this is a very complicated area, right? And even if there is a lot of information set out there, even today, if we were to look at contract differences or options or shares that are issued on the stock exchange, there may be like 500 page prospectus. Do consumers really know? In some ways, this is where Fintonia or Jeff, the professionals who will do the work and try and understand which is the right stable coin, what are the different types of risks. Because I think it is, even if you had all the information as retail, how would you know?
Jeff, do you agree?
Yeah, I totally agree. It's pretty tough for a retail customer to do their homework and to do the research.
Yeah.
Because when you look at a traditional type of platform for trading or even a bank account, we don't ask to a retail customer to have some complementary insurance. And when we discussed with the insurance player who are providing some insurance to against a DPEG or against cybersecurity, we realize that very few retail customers have this habit to subscribe for insurance. So I totally agree with Adrian. It belongs now to the crypto players, including Trade Together. I think it's a wake-up call for everyone to have such insurance to protect and the retail customer, don't serve retail customer on our side, but all the customer in general that we are serving.
So you serve institutional investors?
Absolutely.
And so this insurance you're talking about against the risk of depegging, who is that available to?
So you have some neo insurance, and again, you can go to our website and ask us, but they are neo insurance. And now the question is really to check whether, based on the country where you're located, are they recognized or not? So what I would recommend really in Singapore is to go to the MIS Money Authority of Singapore website to see what are the insurance and how to protect themselves.
Interesting. Gentlemen, let's get your take on the big question. There's a lot of debate on the internet. What caused Terra's coin to become untethered? This is a tough one, I can tell from the radio silence. Adrian, go ahead.
It is difficult to explain. And yeah. I think to understand it, we have to understand that the mechanism which supported UST. So it is, as I mentioned, an algorithmic stablecoin. So that at any time, Terra was not necessarily backed by fiat. So at any time, if you had one UST, you could always exchange it for $1 worth of Luna. Right? And what that therefore allowed people to do was, if the price varied, you can arbitrage. You can buy one and sell for another. That algorithm tried to maintain a one-for-one take.
Mm-hmm.
So the challenge, though, is when you lose confidence in PEG and people start to sell both sides of the UST and Luna, you go into a death spiral. So when you, that means you cannot redeem fast enough. So this death spiral was set off allegedly by hedge funds and others, trying similar to the George Soros who broke the British pound peg in the 90s.
Jeff, was the problem, you know, not so much a death spiral, but, you know, this question of what exactly was backing Luna? What gave Luna its value?
Yes. So I would say Terra USD was backed by Luna, but Luna was backed by the validator, by those who were minting and those who were believing in a Luna project into a Terra ecosystem. So I think the UST, Terra UST stablecoin, was reliant on the supply of Luna and then also Bitcoin. Remember that Doc Won said, one of the founders of Terra, announced that he wanted to back the Terra UST with some Bitcoin. So behind, the way it worked was decentralized governance with lots of validators who were owning the Luna, who were in charge to validate the next step for each of the mechanisms behind UST and Luna. So when this attack came, as Adrian described, there was a lack of kind of reactivity. They started to mint the Luna in an over manner to defend the peg of UST. Then they started to burn also some UST to reduce the supply. They started to sell additional Bitcoin to defend the UST, and then we saw the collapse that everyone witnessed.
Is it important, gentlemen, even despite what has happened, and especially if this was the product of a calculated attempt, is it important not to dismiss the whole category of stable coins, Adrian?
Yes, I think, as I mentioned, there are three types of stable coins. And if we step back, you know, the use of stable coins are incredibly efficient, incredibly quick, and it shows the, I guess, the inefficiency of the traditional financial service system. Now, I guess after Terra, the algorithmic backed stable coins will be under tremendous scrutiny because ultimately there's a question of why should they be worth one versus the fiat collateralized stable coins, which I think if they're truly backed by US dollars or highly liquid commercial securities or treasuries, they are less likely to be under the same attack or less vulnerable.
Did you want to weigh in on the whole category of stable coins and whether it's important not to dismiss that entire category? I mean, what do we know about market cap, three largest stable coins by market value, for example?
Yeah, no, thanks a lot, Michel, for that question. So indeed, there are 200 stablecoin today into the market. You're going to have maybe 10 really interesting stablecoins that we are following on our side. I will say that it's important not to dismiss such type of stablecoin, the rules driven by the algorithm, because otherwise, for a driverless car or autopilot car, if there is one accident, should we also dismiss all the algorithm and the technology behind? I don't think so. I think it's a matter of having more scrutiny. It's a matter of reinforcing the rules for all the stablecoin issuers. And again, there is still room for innovation. So back in 2008, during the global financial crisis, there was lots of issues. There was lots of lessons learned. And I think this is a phase we are all here now at in the crypto industry, is the lesson learned, how to fix that and how to operate in a more secure manner.
Adrian, what do you foresee could be the road ahead when it comes to regulation and stablecoins?
I think stablecoins in the context of all money supply is still very small, but obviously it's getting larger enough for regulators to look at it. I think MAS have said many times that cryptocurrencies are not suitable or less suitable for retail. So that's why, you know, Fintonia, we only do accredited institutional investors. I think regulators will look at this carefully to make sure that stable coins who purport to actually be backed or represent a fiat currency, there will be some standards, I believe. I agree with Jeff. They play an important role in terms of financial system efficiency and reducing costs and an important part of the financial infrastructure going forward. The other aspect of this is whether or not central banks want to start creating their own essentially stable coins that have the backing of a sovereign government.
Right. And what has the fallout been on Bitcoin arising from what happened to Terra? Has there been sort of a positive impact on Bitcoin?
Not really. I would say that...
you know, people looking at the granddaddy of things and saying, yeah, maybe we should be putting our money into Bitcoin instead.
So Bitcoin, of course, is not a stable coin neither. If you remember, Michel, when I came last time, I said that there's no way Bitcoin will go below 20K. So I think the resistance of Bitcoin to this earthquake, crypto earthquake, has been somehow pretty good. I won't provide any recommendation here, but in both ways, both sides, stablecoin, Bitcoin are here to stay for sure.
And has there been any sort of fallout in terms of impact on Bitcoin in terms of the crypto landscape, Adrian?
Look, I think this is just a necessary part of an emerging asset class, an emerging technology. The weakness of Terra will be, I guess, incorporated in the future for learnings. I think Bitcoin is, though, different to other cryptocurrencies. I think Bitcoin is much more decentralized, has a higher level of, has really won the game for store of value, I would say, for a cryptocurrency versus, say, Ether or other stablecoins. Other stablecoins are a method primarily to transfer value efficiently.
All right. Well, it's a tough topic, but thank you both so much for helping us understand a lot of questions that retail investors have been coming forward with. Joining me today right here on Money and Me, Jeff Ira, CEO of Trade Together. And you heard Adrian Cheung, founder and chairman of the Fintonia Group, discussing stable coins, different types, how exactly stable coins get unpegged, and if there's enough information out there for you to be making your own mind up when it comes to the type of stable coins and the risks that you want to take on for yourself as investors. This is Money and Me. I'm Michelle Martin.
Before acting on the information on Money FM, please consider if it's suitable for your own investment objectives, financial situation, and risk tolerance. To listen to more great interviews, download our podcasts at moneyfm893.sg or download our audio app. That's AWEDIO. Available on Google Play or the App Store.